The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, everybody. Indeed, this is Trish Wood, and we are on the fringe. And I'm so happy to even say that phrase today, because one of the people who inspired me naming my show On the Fringe is our first guest today. It's Chris Barber, who was one of the leaders of the Canadian trucker convoy that had a global impact and inspired Canadians to stand up for themselves, and indeed inspired people everywhere to stand up for themselves before they were crushed by the jackboot of tyranny when our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau imposed the Emergencies Act, which allowed them to not just physically crush the protests by driving them out of Ottawa, but this new, really scary globalist move of freezing bank accounts. And I think psychologically, although I was very, very upset watching the police on horseback push the very, very peaceful protesters out of Ottawa as that was happening. Ironically, I was very engaged because I was supposed to deliver a speech that day and I couldn't make it to Ottawa. So I sent them a video I'd recorded. And one of the organizers, not the chap who's on the show today, who is Chris Barber, another fellow who was doing their audio visuals, called me and he said, "We're not going to be able to show your video because the police on horseback are making their way down this line of convoy people to the main stage where the speeches were being made and the videos being played." And he said, "I just don't think we can do it because they're approaching." I don't care that my speech wasn't heard. That's not the issue. The issue for me was, and what sent a chill down my spine in hearing those words, was that I'm living in a democratic country, allegedly, where protesters are being driven away by police on horseback. So that was awful. But the freezing of bank accounts had, a much bigger effect, in the sense that people were very afraid. There was a list of convoy donors that was being passed around, kind of like a scarlet letter, you know, or a blacklist. A shock jock on Twitter got it and pushed it. I mean, just awful, awful stuff. Because the division in this country of Canada, where I am in Toronto, was so vast that there were people in Canada who wanted to see the trucker convoy protesters, not just the truckers themselves, but the people who supported them, come to ill. I mean, it was they didn't see the bigger picture. They were gleeful about it. And that was also very, very disturbing for me. I might not agree with everything Black Lives Matter says, but as long as they're not burning down buildings and killing people, I would totally support their right to protest. I do. And I think in a sense that's a little bit of the difference between the two sides of the world we inhabit now. And that is that, to say it in a very casual way, our side, which I would say are the people who are thinking critically and thought critically about COVID and the truckers convoy and global governance and that sort of thing, I think that even though we are passionate about our views, we don't try to deny other people their right to say theirs. And the idea that I may not agree with you, but I would die to defend your right to say it, lives and rings on this side, while the other side wants to cancel everybody and keep people quiet, right? So that's the difference. I also don't think that there's very much nastiness on our side either, which may sound kind of self-serving, but I don't feel that way. I don't see it in the way I see it, especially in the trans debate with young people who are so revved up against people like Riley Gaines, the swimmer at the university in California, who had to go into hiding in the school for 3 hours, afraid for her life. We don't see that on the other side. I think reasonableness is gone from that side. And ironically, and this will be fun to talk to Chris about, In Ottawa right now, there is a very, very significant protest of federal workers, federal public servants, and they also have taken over Ottawa for parts of the day. They stopped traffic going over a bridge. I mean, they were doing pretty much the same stuff the truckers were doing, but here is the irony. But the people who were most against the truckers, based just on my observations, many of them were people who lived in Ottawa, but not just because the trucker convoy was an inconvenience for them, which it was to some degree, although passive and reasonably happy and joyful. They were the ones who were really, really, in their own words, traumatized by the presence of the truckers and what they did in the city. And to the point where some of them even gave evidence at the inquiry into the invoking of the Emergencies Act. And what we mostly got was, it was microaggressions. Well, no, they didn't really rape anybody. No, that didn't really, no, there was no arson. And I interviewed Ray McGinnis, who has a great piece in Covert Action about the fact that virtually all of the serious allegations against the trucker convoy have been disproven. But many of them came from people who lived in Ottawa, many of whom are the same civil servants who are on strike right now and doing virtually the same thing the truckers did. So this is the world we live in now. And I don't get the sense that the federal government workers, the public servants, fully understand the irony of their behavior now and their behavior then. I'm just going to read a little something from the Globe and Mail. The pain from the national strike by federal public servants is escalating from irritation to significant disruption as the labor dispute grinds on through a second week with no sign that the two sides are close to a compromise. But one group is likely to be insulated from any major hardship, the striking workers themselves. A combination of rickety payroll technology, bureaucratic inflexibility, and clumsy bargaining by the government means that many, and perhaps most, of the 100,000 or so striking workers will still receive their regular pay in 2 weeks. So here is the trucker convoy and the citizens supporting them, putting everything on the line, their jobs, their rigs, dug in for, I think they were there for 3 weeks or so, and actually suffering and struggling. These people who were very critical of the truckers are doing the same thing and they're getting paid for it. And they're asking for raises that are, in my view, at this time in our country, where everybody seems to be struggling financially and mentally too, they're asking for pretty huge raises. And you know what else? I'm just going to say this, and maybe it's crabby, but the federal public service did pretty well during COVID. They were working from home. They had no pay disruptions. A lot of them got bonuses. So something, how can I put this? Something that really supports unfairness. I guess it's selfishness in the way people view the world now is unleashed. There was a very similar series of strikes in the UK, the NHS, where young doctors were on strike and they were saying, oh yeah, well, people will die as a result of this. You had people waiting for ambulances literally for days. I mean, there's something really, really selfish about the post-COVID world. I don't know what it is. Maybe we were all cooped up for so long, but there's an entitlement now with certain workers and certain groups of people that is really hard to justify given the actual sacrifices that many, many people made during COVID. So Chris Barber is coming up. We've also got Joanna Williams coming. She's one of my favorite guests. She's in the UK. And she's a weekly columnist for Spiked and writes regularly for numerous publications, including The Times, The Spectator, The Telegraph, and The Daily Mail. And she wrote a book called How Woke Won, published in 2022. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. One of the things I want to talk to her about is a piece she wrote recently about how social justice warriorism is infecting the psychological profession, in other words, therapy delivered either by psychiatrists or psychologists, and how it's damaging. Of course it is, but it's one of the most captured professions. You know, journalism's captured for sure, medicine's captured, and now this is. And it's just kind of logic to me that people do well if you give them agency. I've been depressed in my life, terribly, terribly depressed, life-threateningly depressed, I will share, and was fixed by a very, very interesting woman. Her name was Paola Cermignani. She was my psychotherapist. And what she did to pull me out of this terrible funk I was in was get rid of my feeling of hopelessness and convince me that I had agency. And it seems like when you infect this psychiatric process with victimhood, it's the opposite of what you should be doing, right? So we're going to talk to Joanna about that and lots of other things. We're going to get to Chris in a minute, but I just want to say one thing about Tucker Carlson, who was the last person I spoke about on the show last week. I said I had a theory about what happened, and then we ran out of time, as happens on these shows. There's never enough time. And my theory was, I didn't get to tell you what it was, but it was sort of correct. So let's just dive into that for a minute, because I think people who watch Tucker Carlson nightly, as I did, it's a ritual in my house, and I was drawn to him and his opening monologues mostly because he is really a master of critical thinking and hugely, hugely brave. I didn't always agree with his takes, and sometimes he was a little snide, but hey, no one's perfect, and I'll take truth telling and critical thinking over the kind of namby pamby cable news talking head anchors who are just completely out to lunch and not trustworthy anymore. So I was a big fan of Tucker's, really upset when he was fired. Megyn Kelly says now he might technically not have been fired, but he's out. And I suspect that there's going to be some wheeling and dealing around keeping him quiet. I think he was making about $1.2 million a month. Nice work if you can get it. They apparently are talking about paying out his contract, but they may want to silence him as well, because Tucker represents a kind of conservative populism that is not allowed anymore. I mean, he is mean about the Democrats. He is mean about the Republicans. He actually gave a speech at the Heritage Foundation the week before he was fired, where he said something about the GOP, and then he went, yuck, you know, which is true. It's a uniparty, right? That's who was governing us now. It doesn't make a difference. They're all the same. And that's what Tucker's been saying for years. So that may pose an issue whether or not he'll be able to actually find a spot. I suspect he'll go to Rumble. Probably Glenn Greenwald has been on the blower with Tucker saying, come here, come here. And then, of course, OWN and some of the other conservative networks are trying to get him too. So, I mean, he'll be a rich guy. He should be making $50 million a year. He was regularly pulling $3.5 million. He's pulled as many as 5 million. He's the most watched show in cable. Certainly the most watched commentary and news show ever on cable. So Tucker's going to be just fine. But here's what I want to tell you about him. So I was kind of down about it because I am a habitual watcher. And I assumed he would be down, and maybe he is. But here's what is being shown about Tucker right now. The first pictures to appear were in the Daily Mail, and they had a photographer down in Florida where Tucker lives. He also has a place in Maine, on a golf cart with his wife, Susan, who he's been happily married to for 32 years. And there's no dirt on Tucker. There's no accusation has been made about Tucker mucking about with other women. He doesn't do that. And believe me, if he did, we would know, because they hate him on the other side. All of the Oppo research people, like Media Matters, which is run by an old Hillary Clinton apparatchik, I'm sure they've been scouring for any hint of bad behavior, and there hasn't been any. He's happily married. He's got four kids and a bunch of dogs who sleep on the bed. Who wouldn't like somebody like that? But he also seemed happy. He was laughing. And he left a message on Twitter. And I just want to read a little bit of what he said, and then we'll go right to Chris. He said, "One of the first things you realize after you step outside the noise for a few days is how many genuinely nice people there are in this country, kind and decent people, people who really care about what's true, and a bunch of hilarious people also, a lot of those. It's got to be the majority of the population. Even now, that's so heartening. The other thing you notice when you take a little time off is how unbelievably stupid most of the debates are that you see on television. They're completely irrelevant, trust me, as someone who's participated." And he's not talking about the debates he was involved in on Fox. He was talking about CNN. "There's no discussion at all," he said, "on topics like war, civil liberties, emerging science, demographic change, corporate power, and natural resources." He's right about that. But the key to me from the little message that Tucker sent out to us all is that we should be happy in our lives regardless of what we're seeing in media and who we're following on Twitter and who is in our social media feeds. He's a happy man living a happy life, even though what he reports on in his monologues is pretty dire. So I just wanted to put that out there for y'all, because it's an important message, isn't it? These are difficult times for us, and we got to navigate through them in a way that keeps our sanity and some semblance of being in a good mood in our families intact. And I think he's showing the way there a little bit. I'm going to go to break now, and then we'll be back in a second with Chris Barber, who was one of the leaders of the famous and fabulous trucker convoy movement that spread like wildfire around the globe. And he's got a lot to say. We'll be back in a moment.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
I went to watch Monster Trucks with my guy friends. My wife went with a girlfriend to walk through a flower garden.
Yeah. There you go. Pure archetype. And we can't forget that. I think the culture really wants us, again, going back into the shadow, into the darkness of what's going on out of the light of the monster trucks. That I used to think was just evolutionary, but now I believe that it is part of an agenda. You know, this idea of trying to essentially steamroller the archetypal differences and just make them
exactly
all
right.
One. There's no place for that difference. And, you know, this idea of equality, people don't seem to understand that equality is equality in values, not equality in physical things. There is, or archetypal things. It's more of which is more valuable, the male archetypes or the masculine archetypes or the feminine archetypes. And it's like they're both equally valuable. So there is an equality.
Yes.
But not in the actual way they're presented or displayed. There isn't.
Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country is all about.
TNT Radio.
See, my guest coming up right now, Chris Barber, actually is the voice of freedom. He led with Tamara Leach and some others the trucker convoy movement in Canada that set the Western world on fire, not literally, because people were so desperate to feel represented by people outside of the apparatchiks in public health who were grinding and grinding and grinding us down. So here is Chris Barber. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm very well, Trish. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. So I want to ask you about my opening bit there and the fact that many of the people who were so against the trucker convoy in Ottawa are now protesting, just like you guys did in the same place in Ottawa. What's it like for you to watch that now?
Well, I seen a video yesterday of a protester kicking the side of a car as it drove through the line, and I thought to myself, that is actually more violence and anger than what we've seen in the 3 weeks of the truckers were in Ottawa, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. And what do you think is going on? I mean, is it that my theory about why, in part, why you were treated as badly as you were, portrayed as badly as you were, is that the pump was kind of primed against you by the prime minister before you got there with these epithets of, you know, racism, so whatever he said, this dumb stuff he said before you even got there. Do you think that that's what was afoot?
Undoubtedly, yes. When you go against the narrative, when you go against the government per se, especially when it comes to the tyrannical nature of what Justin Trudeau runs this country, like you're considered the enemy. And the way for somebody like Justin Trudeau to win that is to manipulate the people's minds. And anybody that listens to the legacy media in this country is somebody that they can use as a tool. And that's exactly what they did with us when we first set out on our drive. They labeled us as racist, as white supremacist, as misogynistic. They called us every name in the book, and then they kept using that media and that narrative the entire time to turn the public against us. And they were successful to a point. I see that narrative is flipping now. I've been watching a lot of the people that are actually searching for the truth and what happened there, the people that watched the live streams, the people that have walked away from mainstream media, legacy media for a reason. People are seeing exactly what happened there, and it was completely opposite from what the prime minister made it look like and also from the legacy media.
Shame on him, because you're citizens too. And you know, for someone to govern in a way that suggests that he supports only the democratic rights of citizens who voted for him and who are on board with his policies, and that anybody who doesn't agree has no right to protest. And he kind of said that in a clip. I wish I'd archived it. I'll find it and talk about it on an upcoming show. But he's almost said, if you're protesting against the government, we're not going to be nice to you.
Exactly that. You know, and you know this as well as I do, and I hope we'll let everybody in Australia know this. There's been a huge divide between Western Canada and Eastern Canada for far too many years. And yeah, during that movement, we proved that the East and the West could come together. You know, like Tamara said this in a documentary film that was released, and we've been pushing the last little while here. She's seen somebody on the street corner with a flag from Quebec, hugging another person from a flag holding a flag from Western Canada and Alberta. That's never happened before. The government has done a very good job at keeping Quebec and Eastern Canada separated from the West.
Yeah.
And 14 months ago, we came together as a country, and we proved exactly, you know, that the government is the one that's been doing this.
The government has been doing it. And the other thing, the media has been doing it too, right? I mean, the government uses the media, but I talk about this so often on this show and my podcast too, that we live in siloed information worlds where we curate our own social media feeds. We either watch this group of programs or that group of programs, and we rarely are engaging in the same way, which means tragically that we have different worldviews. I mean, our factual views of the world are completely different because we're getting our news and information from different sources. And I think that Western leaders, especially globalist ones, have figured that out, and they use it against us.
I would say you're 100% correct there. This has been a tactic used by, you know, power control governments for how many years now. You look at, there's some similarities, and I hate to bring this analogy up, but there's a lot of similarities the way the government uses the media today is the same way they used the media back in the 1930s in Germany. You know, when you look at what actually happened there and how they used the propaganda against its own people to turn a narrative, it's scary, and it's very scary.
Yeah. Well, there are some similarities in the level of propaganda. I haven't seen in my lifetime as much propaganda as I'm seeing now. And as someone who's a news professional for like 35 years, it's pretty shocking. I want people to really hear about you in this interview, because you represented something as a, you know, a symbol of people saying, no, we want to make our own decisions, and yes, we can argue with public health. Take me back to the beginning. Why did you decide that a trucker convoy of this nature was necessary? And why did you think it would work?
That's a really good question. So the turning point for me would have been October of 2021. The government of Saskatchewan, the province I live in Canada here, decided to implement the COVID vaccine passport. And up until then, we've been dealing with restrictions. I've always been a guy, I wore my mask in the restaurants. I wore my masks in the businesses. I never wanted to be the person that got, you know, the business owner a ticket for me, you know, not being compliant. So I was always that guy. I've always been vaccinated. I've always taken my fall flu shot. But something about this didn't feel right, the way they were pushing that vaccine on us. And I held off as long as I could. And being a typical, you know, blue collar Canadian worker like I am, my nose is to the grind. I've always worked really hard and continue to do so. But that was a turning point in October when we couldn't go back. So we put up with it for now. We kept fighting the mandates and the vaccine, the policy that was coming in. But January 15th was the turning point when the federal government made it impossible for anybody that was not vaccinated to cross the international border into the U.S. And that was the point that affected me and a lot of other truckers that I know were just done with it. Justin Trudeau likes to claim that 10% of Canadian truck drivers are unvaccinated. I call that a lie. I would say it's closer to 35 to 40%. We've lost so many drivers in this industry since the mandates came into effect for that border crossing, and it was enough. A lot of truckers reached out to me via social media, and we decided to start what we would call a slow roll. Anybody in the trucking industry, it was a slow roll. We were just going to slow roll our local communities, our parliament headquarters, and then the idea came to go to Ottawa, and it was a collective agreement between different people within the group that I was speaking with. Tamara Leach was brought in. Tamara was somebody that has always been in the transport industry. She's got really good qualities when it comes to logistics and coordination. It was a completely 100% grassroots movement that came from nowhere. I have never protested a day in my life. I've never been an activist. And to see what we started and, my life has been very busy for the last 14 months now. It really, I can't say enough the people I've met and the conversations that I've had.
So I remember speaking to you very, very early on, actually before you guys even got to Ottawa. I think maybe before it had even started, or it was just about to start. And it was very interesting because you were really mad, as a lot of us were. And I think the fact that you guys took the decision to do something was very, very uplifting for people in this country.
It was. You know, one of the common themes that we heard as we traveled across Canada on our way to Ontario was the word hope. I didn't realize that there were so many people that had been drugged down by these lockdowns for the last number of years that were so... They were so done. They were. I've got letters in my stack of envelopes that I received from people all across this country that people's mental health was suffering so bad. There were so many people ready to take their lives, and the minute that those trucks fired up, it gave people hope again. And people lined the side of our highways to watch us go through. At all hours of the day, at all hours of the night, we were sometimes 30 miles long in length, and. It was absolutely amazing. There's one thing that I can say about the United States that I've always envied was the way that the Americans look up to their flag. That American flag is always, it's always flown high. It's everywhere. You see it on every corner down in the United States. And I always thought to myself as I travel across America, you know, I wish Canada would do the same. Like, why can't we do that with our flag? You see the Canadian flag, but you don't really see it. And you couldn't buy a Canadian flag when those trucks were going across the country. And now to this day, you see Canadian flags everywhere. Everybody has a Canadian flag out there. We found pride in her flag again.
Yeah. That was a very, very interesting part of it. And it makes me think of some of the negative things that are said, that even the people who were against it, who were calling you anti-vaxxers and all the other nonsense, are also people who, when they write the word freedom in their Twitter, they put it D-U-M-B. When did this happen that caring about being a free person makes you, an artifact of ridicule? I mean, it's just astonishing what's happened to the way some people in this country think. And I believe they'll regret it. I do. I believe they'll regret thinking this way one day.
I think the narrative's starting to change. Like I said before, I've been watching the people. There's a lot more, the death rate's a lot higher now. I've got friends that are losing loved ones to stroke, and cancers are more rampant now than ever. And people, they're slowly starting to open their eyes. You can see what's going on here.
I think it's from the vaccine. Is that what you mean? Chris,
I believe the vaccine injuries. Yes. Yes. The vaccine injuries. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just want to keep going on your journey. So you were crossing the country and people were coming out. Those scenes at the overpasses were so brilliant and so emotional and so surprising, right? I mean, I was sitting in my studio doing my podcast, my kind of anti-COVID policy or anti-stupid policy podcast, and I heard people wrote me letters and emailed me and stuff, but seeing people out there in the flesh cheering you on was pretty great. What was that like for you?
Very emotional, almost spiritual. One of the regrets that I have now would have been putting a GoPro camera on the mirror of the truck as we went across Canada, seeing the footage now, the campfires in the ditch, children standing on the side of the road. Remember, it was minus 30 degrees Celsius here. It was cold. It was very cold. And people sat out there for hours and hours and hours just to watch. I, as you know, I had coffee with you in Toronto a couple of days ago. I live 3,000 kilometers to the west of you. And instead of catching a plane to go home, I drove home. I drove all the way home, and I drove the same route that we went. And it was so good to see the parking lots that we filled. The town of Nipigon, we stopped for a coffee break there, Nipigon, Ontario. We plugged the entire town up. Like, the town was completely 100%. It was traffic jammed for the time that we stopped. I drove past there, and the memories that I had of driving past the mining camps in Northern Ontario, and they pulled their equipment out to the highway and they put the booms and the buckets in the air with Canadian flags on it, and they shot fireworks off as we drove. It was spiritual. There's one way to say it. And that was out in the middle of nowhere, Canada. And then you get closer to the city centers and the traffic would be even greater. Yet every overpass we came to was flooded with people with Canadian hockey sticks with Canadian flags attached to them. Those memories I'll never forget. Nobody can ever take them from me.
No, it awakens something in this country. The only thing that I can compare it to, although it's a negative thing, was the outpouring of support on a smaller scale, obviously, but for the Humboldt bus crash. And those 16 kids who died on the road, and I guess it was Saskatchewan too, wasn't it? That hockey team. And even out here in like super sophisticated Toronto, people were coming in to my husband's market with hockey sticks to display. Like, it was a big thing here too, right? And I felt it very deeply. And I'm not a hockey fan. I'm a basketball person. You know, my kid played hockey, but it's not. Plus we have the Leafs, so what's the point? But I felt it's like when our hockey teams play in the Olympics or something, all of a sudden I'm kind of all in, because there's something innately Canadian about it. And there's something innately Canadian about the fact that we were lifted out of our depression and our fear and our inactivity around COVID-19 by our blue collar brothers and sisters, right? That's a really Canadian thing for me. I don't know if you see it that way, but COVID was such a failure of the managerial class that it is not odd that people without PhDs in epidemiology were the ones who kind of lit the way home in their trucks.
You're right. You know, for years, how many every time you see a protest or that, you always assume it's, you know, union related or some government organization or that. You never see the blue collar people essentially stand up and take a stand. And maybe this is one of the first times in the last how many years that the, you know, the working class, the blue collar people finally got off their butts and said, you know, I've had enough of this. I wanted the government to make the mandates make sense. That was the biggest thing that I felt throughout the pandemic was, I'm not allowed to walk down this aisle, this direction in a grocery store, even though I'm wearing a mask and I'm vaccinated and, you know, grandma's vaccinated and I can't sit beside this person because they might not be vaccinated. That's all I ever asked was make it make sense. And they still, to this day, they can't make it make sense.
No, they can't. And I heard today, I saw it on Twitter and I believe it's true that Canadians, unvaccinated Canadians like myself, cannot travel to America still. The CDC will not lift that edict, which is insane given what we know about the shots, right? I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's
I believe
like
it's coming.
Go ahead.
I believe May 11th, they're going to lift the restrictions on May 11th, I believe is when, I think that just announced a little while ago. But yeah, that's one mandate that's been in effect since it started was that border cross. Justin Trudeau lifted the Canadian version of it. It was Joe Biden that kept it in place for this long. And who knows?
No, I know. I'm going to go to a break. And when I come back with Chris Barber from the Trucker Convoy in Canada, he's one of the leaders of that organization. I want to talk to you about a couple of things, what it was like on the ground in Ottawa, and also your arrest and the Emergencies Act and the legal problems that are still facing people like you through what I call lawfare. It's how they get at people now by using law to tie them up and make them go broke. So we're going to cover all those things when I come back. I'm Trish Wood. This is TNT Radio with Chris Barber. See you in a moment.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I'm friends with probably the world's greatest statistician, William Briggs. And he had a very, very interesting article today. And you should take a look at it if you can. You have to Google his name, okay? The less you know about climate, the more you cry about climate. And there are some very, very interesting points that are made in it. And you hear me all laughing at it. The latest thing to do is to push climate change so it causes anxiety. So listen to this passage from the article that people wrote on climate anxiety. Our physical health can suffer in many ways from the effect of climate change. Most obvious are cases of mortality. In July 2018, an unprecedented heat wave in Japan killed more than 1,000 people. Now, that's not something I'm happy about. Researchers later showed the event could not have happened without climate change. Can you imagine saying that? You have to love to understand that those first two sentences are completely nuts. Anyway, it takes a false and absurd idea to say that a heat wave could not have happened without climate change. That kind of statement can only be the result of stupidity or propaganda. You can pick. Sorry, I got a little bit bent out of shape today. Calm down. Serenity now. Enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi, and I told you what you got to do.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're with Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, everybody. Back with a special guest today, Chris Barber, who was one of the leaders of the truckers movement there from the very, very earliest days right through to the declaration against them of the Emergencies Act by our Prime Minister. So, Chris, when did you people fully understand the magnitude of what you were achieving? Was it like when the first million rolled into your GoFundMe, or when?
You know, that's a funny story. Yeah. So Tim Erlich was in charge of getting the GoFundMe account set up, and I was against it, to be honest with you, because I thought, I'm going, you know, to Ottawa on my own funds. I don't need anybody to support, you know, to support this drive. This is for my own personal reasons. And Tamara said, you know, there's a lot of people there that won't be able to afford to do that. And we will need to raise money for that. And if we always surpassed the 1 million mark, and it just kept going, and it turned into a thing where, you know, we were watching the GoFundMe numbers climb and climb and climb. And that coincided with the amount of people that we've seen on the side of the highways encouraging us to travel on, and absolutely amazing. Yeah, as you know, GoFundMe, we exposed just how corrupt GoFundMe would be to anyone that goes against the narrative, you know, when the government was actually working with GoFundMe behind the scenes to have the account pulled. There's proof for that now. And so they released the first one.
And the mayor of Ottawa bragged about it. Yeah, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Mayor Jim Watson's. Yeah. So the GoFundMe was shut down, and then we started it up on the Give, Send, Go platform with Jacob Wells. And that one surpassed. We were up around $12 million Canadian, I believe, before the government came after those funds too. So, you know, woo-hoo! We should have named ourselves, something else, and we maybe would have been able to access the funds. But all that money was essentially tied up.
Yeah, and that's not what people wanted. I know somebody who, when the GoFundMe was pulled down because people were telling lies about you guys, I think GoFundMe owes you people a public apology, actually, and they really need to check themselves on being influenced politically by who uses the platform. But she gave money to GoFundMe, and then when there was trouble, she gave more, and then when there was trouble, she gave more. And it was almost like, I think the people giving money, mostly Canadian, felt that they were doing something. You know, they were so hopeless that at least I can give money and do something, and that's why it was pouring in. So tell me what those days in Ottawa were like for you. I mean, besides obviously freezing cold, tell me about what that was like, but also tell me about how you feel you were portrayed in the media, if the coverage actually was portraying what you were living when you were down there in Ottawa.
Well, anyone that watched the live streams will be a good example of the live streams of actually what happened and the people on the ground in Ottawa and were watching what was going on day to day. Compared to the media would come in and show a different side of it. They would pick spots where five people were standing. They would show a spot where two trucks were parked, and they really, you know, like they say in this documentary we're trying to push right now, the documentary Unacceptable, it was farther for CBC news anchors to walk to their car than it was to walk to the protest to see what actually happened. And that's the reality of it. And a lot of people seen that over the course of 3 months, and it woke so many people up to just how corrupt the legacy media is throughout this country. I can tell you a firsthand experience that Ottawa changed me as a human being. I went there with maybe closed eyes, maybe half asleep, maybe just too busy working in this country. And what I seen in Ottawa was remarkable. And like I said before, spiritual. There was an era about it that higher powers were at work. And definitely. Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, but I was sick with COVID for the first little while and during the protests. And I was fine. You know, imagine that. Yeah, I was fine. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I've had it twice, right? But I'll just take my chances with COVID. I'm not in a, well, you know what? Ironically, I'm in a higher risk group post COVID era because of the restrictions. So when in March of 2020, when the lockdowns happened. Up to that point, I was in the gym 3 days a week and doing a Pilates class, right? The ultimate kind of middle-class matron, me, doing Pilates. And I was, my figure was good. I had, my weight was good and I was super healthy. And then the lockdowns happened. My gym closed. I got depressed and I was kind of doing the Netflix and chill and Uber Eats thing way, way too much because that's how I cope. You know, I can't drink anymore. So, you know, I was using food to kind of medicate myself because I was so unhappy. And so I actually, like many people did, I put myself into the high risk group because I wasn't physically active and I gained a lot of weight. But even with that, I'll take my chances with the virus if I get it again. But so I want to talk to you about the experience there because there was, everybody says how joyful it was. Viva Fry did some of the best live streams. I had him on my other show many times reporting on it. And it really seemed like there was a spiritual aspect to it. Can you describe for me that feeling of being in these large crowds of people who were really trying to change something that was bad?
Well, I've always used this analogy was that the dealing with truck drivers, and I've been a truck driver for close to 30 years, so I can say this and stand behind it, but trying to deal with 30, you know, with as many truck drivers as we had there, it was like herding cats normally. You put 200 truck drivers in a room and close the doors and somebody's going to get a black eye and somebody's going to broken lip. We worked with so many different people throughout the course of that event, and we had not one single altercation. We had not one single, you know, there was no violence. There was no anger. There was no hatred. There was no harm to anyone. The only harm that we ever seen was from law enforcement when they decided to come down on us. But that being said right there, we led 20 to 30 miles of traffic across Canada on two-lane highways in the winter time at, you know, freezing temperatures, you know, being sick with COVID, you really don't have the energy to do much, right? Not, COVID's knocked the daylights out of me a few times. And I still managed to be up going 16 hours a day throughout having COVID and continued to do that for the amount of time it was. I remember there was a doctor that knocked on my door, Dr. Francis Christian, a mutual friend of ours, an amazing gentleman, knocked on my hotel room after watching, amazing guy. And he says to me, Chris, you're not looking very healthy. I'll prescribe some stuff for you. And he filled me full of vitamins and nutrients. And it was a matter of days and I was good to go. But there's no explanation why I had the energy that I had for as many days as I did, as sick as I was, you know, other than divine interventions. So.
Yeah, no, there was something really special going on. I just want to clarify something, too, because we said that you were not the convoy generally was not being portrayed accurately by the media. And I haven't actually given a detail about that. But let me just say this. And I used to work at CBC, so I know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They got everything wrong, right? There was a Nazi flag that had nothing to do with you guys. I believe it was what they call a false flag. It was a plant. And Alexa Lavoie, Rebel News, has pretty much shown that. We just have to figure out who the people are. I think there's a reward, actually, for IDing them, which is really fun. There were false allegations about the money coming into the GoFundMe and the Give, Send, Go. And also, a CBC anchor actually said this, and I'm not kidding, that maybe the convoy was a Vladimir Putin operation or a Russian operation. I just thought, wow. You know, it's just, do they understand how absolutely ridiculous they are and how they are the ones that are hurting the country right now with this kind of, not to mention the arson fake story, which I got to blow up because one of the cops in Ottawa said, no, we knew on day one it wasn't the convoy, so I don't know why they were saying that. I mean, it was just all wrong. Everything was wrong. Part of it, I don't know. Do you think they really believe those things? Are they just shilling for, I don't know. I don't understand it, but. What was your, what, why do you, remember, you think they behave that way? Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, do you remember a time in when I was a child, when I was a kid, we always used to sit around the TV and watch nightly news, you know, Lloyd Robertson or Sandy Ronaldo or, you know, in Canada here, we have
Walter Cronkite.
Two major broadcasting companies.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one too, yeah. And we believed in narrative. We believed whatever had. We all huddled around the TV in the evenings. I live on the farm out in the middle of Saskatchewan in the prairies here. We have two channels growing up on TV. One would be CTV and one would be CBC. And we all became accustomed to that. Whatever they told us in the news, we believed as it. And there's still today people today that actually still follow that, the people that aren't involved. So I noticed a lot of our critics are all, you know, it could be, I guess, of the elderly that watch the CBC and the CTV nightly and get their news from that. You know what the scary thing is, and the question that I have to ask, who within Ottawa, the city of Ottawa, has in possession a Nazi flag? Somebody had to go out and buy that Nazi flag. Yep. I would like to know who, because I know I never seen it. I know the majority of the people were there. I've never, you know, a Nazi flag. Somebody had to go out and purchase a Nazi flag. Yeah. It still has that to this day.
Yeah. And her story was so great because she did what journalists do. She looked up where the shot was taken, which is right by the Chateau Laurier Hotel. In that particular spot, the photograph was taken from another particular spot, which she tracked. And the photograph of the person with the Nazi flag was given to Justin Ling, who was an anti-convoy CBC guy. Wouldn't say who the photographer was who took the picture. I mean, it's just ludicrous. The whole thing was ludicrous. How gullible can you be? But, you know, I guess when your mind has been poisoned by the prime minister, you're prepared to believe just about anything. So let's talk about the arrest and what your status is now, because I'm trying to make a point, in a sense, with this show, too, about the idea of lawfare, which is where people use, and governments and organizations use, lawsuits and legal means to tie people up and bankrupt them and harm them through the legal process itself. And I feel a bit like that's what's happening to you. So tell me about being arrested and then what's happened subsequently.
Well, it was February 17th. We just stopped at a local Tim Hortons and grabbed a cup of coffee and nonchalantly walking down the street when two officers approached from behind and grabbed my arm and not to say I didn't get to finish my Tim Hortons coffee anyway. So I was arrested, handcuffed and put into the back of the police car. I then spent 26 hours in what they call the drunk cell, apparently, which is pretty uncomfortable compared to the amount of time that my counterpart Tamara Leach spent in jail. It was near nothing. My bail hearing was on the Friday before the long weekend, and the judge was really, really decent to deal with. The order for arrest came out the day after, on the 18th. So for some reason, Tamara and I were both singled out on the 17th, arrested, and I met the bail conditions, and I always said through the protest that we were there to respect the law, to make sure that we followed every rule and work with law enforcement. And that's exactly what we did when they came for us. We cooperated 100%. The police officers I dealt with for the entire time were 100%. They were in it, extremely good to work with, never had a single issue. And I can honestly say that throughout my time in that little 5x8 cell, as uncomfortable as it was, the officers were really well. I had no issues there. So I've been charged with, at that point, I've been charged with a few counts. One was mischief. One was counseling to commit mischief. And then later on, as I got home, then more charges came in. So Monday morning of this last week, I was charged with the seventh offense of counseling to commit, to go against a court order, I believe. So seven offenses. Usually those are considered summary offenses, which is tickets and community service, I guess. They've upped these charges to indictable offenses, and they're pushing for 2 to 10 years in a federal prison. It's something for a guy that's made it 47 years of my life with never being in trouble with the law, never having handcuffs on, never being in the back of a police station. It's a different life to live in the last 14 months. I can tell you, if you think that it doesn't weigh on you somewhat, you know, there people are lying. I know a lot of other truckers that were in the same exact spot as me were arrested. You know, a lot worse. My arrest, because I was the first arrested, I was taken away and put in a drunk cell. Some of my friends were arrested And this is the injustice that I think a lot of people don't know the ins and outs of what actually happened in Ottawa. They were arrested. They were zip tied. They were they sit them on a curb in minus 30 degree weather at minus 30 with no gloves on their hands. They were shipped then out of town in a transport bus, in a prisoner, essentially a prisoner bus, and kicked off at the outskirts of the city limits in minus 30 degree weather and left to fend for themselves. Thank God we had a group of people there, Melissa McKee and the Bikers Church of Ottawa, that knew this was going on and ran back and forth to go pick people up on the outskirts of the city and get them back to her church where she kept them warm and fed them and talked with them. And the amount of people that came together last minute like that is just amazing to this day.
Yeah, no, I know. And we got to run because the music's coming up, but I know you're being sued, right? Also for a ton of money by what, Citizens of Ottawa or something? Just quickly?
Yeah, $400 million.
Yeah, like you've got that, right? Okay. But I'll loan it to you, Chris. But you know, you got to pay. You got to engage with it. So that's what they're doing. It's ridiculous. And I wish you well. And we'll have you back too, because there's way more to talk about with you, Chris. And I know people in Canada are very, very grateful to you. So thank you so much. And we'll be back a little while with thank you, Chris, with our hour two. Bye bye, Chris. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you.